Albion fans, welcome back to the latest episode of the Baggies Broadcast in association with the Kettle and Toaster Man. My name is Johnny Drury, and as always, I'm here alongside Albion correspondent Lewis Cox to talk all things Albion on a weekend where it could have been better, but it could have been a whole lot worse. Coxie, all right, pal? Bit of a half weekend for you. I know our friend Andy Johnson's given you a new nickname, PT, part-time, but you were you did return for the Bank Holiday Monday game. So yeah, how was your weekend,
Johnny?
All
of this banter just encourages the listeners, Johnny. You know, we don't need to know what Andrew Johnson
does. And there's more to come, listeners. I should tell you, there's more to come ahead of this weekend.
What? I wasn't going to unload on this, but what the good listeners don't realise, Johnny, do they? Is those long office days that I sit and then get invited to, you know, do's I can't get out of on. I hope no one's listening to this.
I hope Andy Johnson's not listening to this because he knows he's got under your skin now.
He's always under my skin, mate. That man lives under my skin. No, he doesn't.
How was your wedding anyway? You're at a wedding on Friday. Well, we all know that we'd rather have been at a wedding than sat at the Den on a Friday afternoon.
Absolutely. No, it was good. Yeah. It was good. I don't like missing. Contrary to popular belief, John, I do not like missing games. I do not like missing games. I just like travelling to sunny climes, perhaps not the off season where it's cheaper. But it was good. Thankfully, as Albion listeners know, I got married at the start of this season, and so thankfully it wasn't a second wedding of my own. that marriage is still, you know, up and running.
Still going strong.
It was my cousin, and we're a small family, so it's nice to see people. I was there with more than a few baggies, some probably listening to this, so it was good to. It's a bit of a busman's holiday in that regard, to be honest, Johnny. The Albion fans there like to chat to you about everything related to the job, as you can imagine, and with a game going on, obviously down at Millwall at the same time. There's a lot of. A lot of Albion sort of focus and chatter, but yeah, that's cool with me. It was really good, thank you. The weather was fine, it was nice little venue in Tamworth. Great day and a great night. And I was made the better, I have to say, by John Swift's penalty and your report bringing us news of that. So, thank you. And two comebacks, wasn't it, over the weekend in which Jesus came back famously. As you made reference to on Easter Monday, Johnny, so did the Baggies for overall two, you know, potentially huge points. Let's be honest, when it could have, as you said at the top, quite easily been a return of 0 points. So probably a mixed weekend on the footy front all round. But the way Monday ended, I think we've got a bit more of a spring in our step, haven't we, than how it looked 20 minutes from the end.
Yeah, it wasn't. It wasn't great at certain points on Monday. We're going to be talking, we'll reflect on Monday's game a little bit more. We're not going to really talk about Millwall because that's gone now. And the less said about that game, the better. We'll look at what it means for the table. It was all right. Sausage baguettes, I think, because it was like midday, wasn't it? We'll see what that means for the table. We'll look ahead to the last six games and give a bit of prediction of how we think it's going to go. And we've got plenty of your questions in from Baggies fans. Coxie, Monday was sort of result over performance, really. We've talked the ins and outs of how Albion played, how they got out of jail and the positives and the negatives. But did, you know, Carlos made four changes, one enforced, three for sort of rotational purposes, although we know Grady Dean Garner had a little bit of a knock beforehand.
Did
the selection play a part in the way that Albion performed?
Yes and no, maybe not. I mean, do I think Swift massively grasped his opportunity as a starter? First start for him since Plymouth away, wasn't it? I'm not sure he did, particularly. I thought he was bright for 10 minutes, then faded quite badly. Whether it had a part to play, I'm not sure. Obviously, I wasn't at Millwall, but reports were dire, dreadful first half, really, and a slightly improved second half, obviously, to get the goal. I don't think the first half on Monday was brilliant, if I'm honest. I thought Albion were okay for 10 or 15 minutes. Then I thought it really levelled out and really went flat, to be honest, in terms of everything on the pitch off it. And then the second half, from minutes 45 50-70. Yeah, it was Watford well in the ascendancy. The Hornets were really on top and deserved their lead. Whether they deserved a 2-goal lead, I don't know, but obviously they were efficient. And Albion struggled, didn't they? I remember saying to you in the press box as it happened, when Thomas Asante went through and missed that early chance, you know, it's not quite the game right there, but it's just the whole complexion and story of the game, isn't it? It changes it altogether. It changes Watford's mindset if they go a goal down early. It's the position Carlos Corberan as a head coach loves to find himself in, you know, an early lead. And it is a little bit more of the same from Thomas Asante's point of view. Obviously, another returner to the side. And we know, and we'll get onto BTA a bit more probably in this pod, but we know when he goes through on goal and has a little bit of a time to think, he's not as good or as clinical as the tougher, more instinctive chances, as proved later in the game. And Backman made that early save. The rebound was sort of snuffled out, wasn't it, when Johnson was over it. And they felt like massive moments came and went. And BTA headed one wide across goal just before half-time. And two, it felt like a huge turning point for me. And I think Albion suffered a bit after that. I think Watford grew. The changes, I don't know. I thought Ajayi was okay, probably the pick of the four. I thought BTA overall, you know, credit him. I think he occupies defences. It's been tough with Wallace leading the line, hasn't it? And that's nothing against Wallace. Not his game, not really his role. Vyman's on a couple of occasions struggled, really. Certainly Millwall was one of them. So I think in terms of Thomas Asante, you've got that presence. You've got a bit of physicality, a bit of movement. And against him yesterday with three burly centre-halves, you know, he had that rough, didn't he? Three big six-foot-pluses straight into his back. That was tricky. On a couple of occasions, he turned them well, won free kicks. Just that final moment for him, isn't it? However, you know, without his goal for 2-1, 20 minutes from time, not long after Watford's second, it must be said. Yeah, that point obviously doesn't happen. And it was an excellently taken strike, wasn't it? It down the other ends of the stadium to us, wasn't it, Johnny? But from our view, certainly, it's like, well, how's he scored from there? He's not going to score from there. And flew into the far corner, didn't it? Whether it went across Backman or through Backman, haven't quite seen an angle of that replay. But again, another example of his finishing and scoring the goals he shouldn't, really, after struggling with chances he should. I think BCA, as I was saying, they grew into it and had some good moments. I think he had a fairly decent game. I don't think it quite happened for Swift, if I'm totally honest. And Tom Fellows was another change, wasn't he? I thought he was one of the picks in the first period, but faded fairly badly after the break. I mean, Mikey Johnson on the other flank, who stayed in, I think was quiet throughout and really shackled out of it, really doubled up on. And we'll get onto that as well. So maybe a mixed bag in the four changes, but I think the changes were expected and probably necessary, weren't they? And then the in-game changes, you know, the midfield two came off just after the hour, didn't they? And Carlos Corberan openly admitted they were tired, fatigued, couldn't get into the challenge, couldn't get forward. So there's a lot of tinkering to be done. And I suppose ultimately the tinkering paid off.
I want to talk about Grady Diangana because I've been looking at some statistics that he is now almost basically level with the stats that he produced while on loan from West Ham in 2019-2020 in terms of games played, goals scored and assists. But for me, his performances are not on a level, like to the eye, are not on a level that they were that season, which is strange. He come on and changed the game. He won Albion the game yesterday. He didn't score, but he won Albion the game.
Won
the point for Albion. But it's just that it's a confusing type of situation that his statistics are as good, but I don't think he's nowhere near what the player that he was in that first campaign when he was at the club. Maybe is that expectation or is that, I don't know. It's a conundrum.
There's a bit of that. Yeah. There's a bit of that. Obviously, he came in on loan. Yeah. Caveat this by saying, obviously, I wasn't reporting on Albion at the time, but obviously he came in as a bit of an unknown quantity, didn't he, really? Bright prospect from West Ham would have been top flight at the time, wouldn't they? Came in, a bit of an unknown quantity, a young age, wouldn't he have been? What would he have been? Barely into his 20s. This bright sort of young winger, daring to try tricks and flicks. I think, and this is only from seeing Albion from afar that season, I remember seeing footage in games on telly and highlight reels of all kinds of footwork and tricks and flair, and don't quite see that as often, I would say, now under Dean Garner. And I think it's probably maturity, I would say. It's probably his game developing and evolving. To me, having watched the last couple of years of Greater Dean Garner, he's not a quick lightning player, is he? He's not blessed with searing pace. He's not that kind of winger. He's much more about the technical. Now, I don't know, from memory, back on that loan, you might be able to say, Johnny, as a young 20, 21-year-old, whatever, did he rely more on his, you know, pace and tricks? Now it seems to be about the kind of, and we've seen it, we've been playing as a 10, you know, not barely been a winger really, has he? He's been attacking, central attacking midfielder. Almost more about that vision and intelligence and sort of feint and drop of a shoulder, which we see more of Dean Garner than this kind of lightning winger who's going to deliver and stuff like that. So Carlos Corbin often describes him as a playmaker. And strange, because we start to see Grady Dean Garner as almost more of a John Swift type player now than maybe that, you know, tricky electric winger than perhaps he was as a teenager or when he came on loan.
Yeah, no, it's an interesting case. And it's quite apt that you mentioned John Swift there, because I want to go on to talking about John Swift. I made this point to someone the other day that, and it's quite bold, and I've written about Swift quite extensively in recent weeks, you know, and he's probably out of all the Albion players, Dean Garner comes into this category as well, one that in the last few years has frustrated me because he's got bags of ability, but there's obviously something missing there. And we saw yesterday, it was a big chance for him. He didn't quite put a stamp on it. I don't think Carlos is having him 100%. And I think that's why we've seen him out of the side in recent weeks, which lends me to believe, even if Albion, this might not happen, but if Albion were a Premier League club, even if they weren't a Premier League club and they were in the Championship next season, it wouldn't wholly surprise me if John Swift is not a West Brom player. No, now, there's a whole different type of thing on this. Wages, he's probably one of the highest earners at the club, etc., etc. But I think Corbrand's tried him out. He's tried him out wide. He's tried him in the 10. You know, and he has had times where he has been in form. But I don't think there's been that consistency there enough. And that's why we've seen him on the bench. Didn't take his chance yesterday. And that's why I'd be surprised if John Swift's got a long-term future at Albion, is what I'm
trying
to say.
I don't disagree with large parts of that. I think the form and the performances and the sheer amount of time he spent on the bench as a big earner, as you say, is one thing. Another thing is the club's financial situation and how that remains. You know, some people listening to this won't like to hear it, but Albion aren't out of a black hole now because Shilan Patel's the owner and the chairman. I've said this before and I'll quote this again and again and again. It wouldn't matter if Elon Musk or Bill Gates or whichever other world-leading billionaire was in charge of Albion. They would still have the same financial restraints this summer and still have to address wage bills and other finances. And yes, out-of-contract players will help, and Albion will have to be strict with that. You know, strict with that, be it the ones they want to and they will let go, ones with a bit of a question mark on them, maybe like Bartley or Phillips, or the ones that have been essential this season, like Kipper and Mowat. They have to be strict. And when it comes to Swift, a player who's at this level very well thought of still, even as an Albion player, has garnered attention, offers from elsewhere that have otherwise sort of been rejected to this point, to last season. I think you're right. I think, you know, the club's position, hopefully from this summer, and this isn't because they'll have bags of money to spend, just because of the contract, I think, situation and maybe the more, you know, the stable ownership. We'll see the head coach for the first time be able to put his print a bit more on the squad than the one he inherited. And not that he's, you know, don't fancy Swift at all or anything like that. I'm not sure he's the archetypal core brand player. And you're right, Johnny, we haven't seen him take an opportunity enough since that injury. And that injury is a long time ago now, let's be honest. It was the very start of October. We're now in the very start of April. So, you know, now Swift would, you know, perhaps rightly argue that, well, barely started a game really since that injury and haven't had the chance to build it up. And maybe there's a small element of truth in there, but you've got to take your moment when it comes, haven't you? You know, Fellows obviously emerged. Johnson's emerged as a sign in the environment in there as well. Dean Garner kind of back from injury as Swift was injured, and then Dean Garner away for 6 weeks with AFCON, but still managed to produce some level of consistency. Now, look, Swift is and remains a very good footballer at this level, quality technical footballer at this level, doesn't he? And that means that in any moment he can do something to score a goal or win Albion a game or create a goal. Now, obviously, you know, Friday was a spot kick, we all know that, but you kind of trust his technical ability, don't you? And he could play a big part before the end of the season, score a key goal, key assist, bit of magic. But we, I think for what John Swift is, yeah, he should and needs to be a regular starter, doesn't he? I think that's the crux for me, as you kind of put it. Those sort of key players, top end stars, need to be regulars in Albion's situation, I think. And that's what might work against him. And look, perhaps, I mean, this is all probably stuff John Swift knows himself. And I'm not saying for a second he won't be here for a definite next season. Obviously, everything needs to work for all parties. But perhaps John Swift sees it better for his career and opportunities as a regular starter that he, you know, tries a different sort of work under a different manager. I don't know. But I think he can still play a role this season. Just he's needed to do more, hasn't he, when he's had the... I thought after the first 10 or 15 minutes, he buzzed around, looked wanting to get involved. And I'm a fan of his as a player. I really am. It's wonderful to watch at times, but drifted out of it, didn't he? And struggled to really influence it. So, and maybe, you know, Dean Garner, on the other hand, we were just having a conversation about Dean Garner changing from that loan to now. You know, another thing worth mentioning, as you'll know better than me, won that penalty down there in Millwall, didn't he? You know, from nothing performance down there in Millwall from anyone in Albion colours, and probably would have lost 1-0, but for the, yes, Swift scored the penalty, but yeah, it's Dean Garner's kind of skill and imagination that wins it. That's three assists from Grady over the Easter weekend that have saved 2 points. I've written today, available on our website now, that in league action alone, that's 7 goals and 7 assists for Dean Garner this season. And it's a good return. Yes, Swift has 8 goals. Yes, absolutely. But yeah, 6 of them, I think I'm right saying, yeah, 6 of them came, yeah, before that injury against Blues in October. So yeah, it's a shame actually, because those first 2 months of the season, month and a half, whatever, were his best football for Albion. And I think we really thought he'd arrived. This is, you know, a division leading player type thing. He was among the top scorers from a number 10 role, but it's just not, unfortunately, not worked out as it for perhaps a collective of reasons, as we've outlined, I guess.
Moving further back, Okai Kushlu hasn't been the best weekend for him. Now, he's been one of the most consistent performers for Albion. Now, down at the Den, he was among a group of Albion players who were pretty poor. Cedric Kipper was another one, and another one who's been a consistent performer this season. But I thought, again on Monday, he was a little bit off the pace. Albion conceded possession so many times, and it wasn't just Yakushlu. Is it time to, with the options that are there, with Chalobah and Mvia, is it time just to give him a little bit of a rest and just mix it up a little bit, given the players that he's got there? We've seen Jan and Mvia come on for like the last 20 minutes in the last two of the last three games, and he's looked okay. Chalobah's there and obviously fully fit. Is it time just to, you know, with the running, the final few games coming in, that will hopefully be leading into a playoff campaign? You know, Yakushu, he almost looks spent, to be honest. You know, I don't think he's playing badly because he's a bad player, because he's not. I think he's just, it's caught up with him a little bit. Fatigue is caught up with him.
Yeah,
he looks jaded. Is it time? Yeah. Or does Carlos not have the trust in them players to do it from the off?
Well, good question, really. I think I read your stuff on Millwall, and I know you sort of emphasised you're cushionally having a bad day down there. What I would say about Monday is I think, I mean, regular listeners of this will know what a big fan of Alex Mowat I am, but I think Mowat struggled as much on Monday. He set very high levels this season, but I think they probably struggled together and most of the side, really, let's be honest. However, exactly what you said there about the tiredness and the fatigue was Carlos Corban's summary, really. I wasn't actually with the Albion head coach after the game on Monday. I was down in the mix zone speaking to a player, but having read what Carlos has said, but the manager tried to make a change at 1-0. He had that triple change involving both midfielders coming off around 65 minutes. Unfortunately, the timings didn't work and Watford were able to score their second just before the changes could be made. So changes were meant to be made at 1, were made at 2-0. And it was interesting when we saw Adam Reach and Jan Envia come on as a central midfield pairing for the Cushlu and Mowat, wasn't it? But Carlos Corban said, look, they were fatigued. They were late to challenges. Yeah, just coming off second best in duels. Because of the tiredness, heavy legs, unable to get forward and support attacks. So the midfield, there's a problem, really, in that second half period when Watford were on top. A little bit of a damning indictment, isn't it, really? I mean, Mowat and Yukushlu's games are different. Mowat's the Duracell bunny energy, isn't he? Now, he's classy on the ball, but he's everywhere, usually. And for him to be off the pace is quite something. Yukushlu's game's less about legs, isn't it, and more about, I'd say, positioning, I would say recycling the ball, winning back the ball. But we've had this all season, haven't we, of him coming off in games and, sort of fairly rarely been able to see out a 90. And we all know, I think, that when he does come off, he sort of influences Toll. What is interesting is in Jan Envia, there's perhaps a deputy clearly ahead of Chalobah in the pecking order now, I would say. And I didn't see how he got on down in Millwall, obviously, but I, in his 20 odd minutes, probably best part of 30 minutes on Monday.
I don't think he came on.
Did he not? I've got a feeling you're right, actually. Yeah. So in his, he had what, 5-10 minutes before the break, Bristol City. This was a huge step forward against Watford, really, 2-0 down, 30 minutes, really. So, and I thought, he won the ball back, a couple of crunching challenges, and seemed a few bits he did with the ball really intelligent. And I think Corbran has really talked up how good of a player this could be when he's, when he's ready, when he's fit enough to be considered. And that in itself will be interesting, won't it? The one thing I would say in Yukushlu and Mowat's favour here is that, Friday, Monday, that schedule, that two games, that sort of doubleheader, I'm sure is tough on legs and minds. Watford are an energetic, buzzing side, full of athleticism and mobility. And the Deli Bashiru in midfield for them, I thought, ran hard and at times ran rings around Albion. So, tough games. However, they were off the back of an international break, weren't they? It's the best part of 2 weeks off. So, you kind of hope, they might be a bit recharged and not struggle for that. Now, it's interesting. I mean, MV is... Let's face it, as we might get onto Adam Reach. I hope we do. And for the record, he was excellent in that centre midfield role and helped change the game in Albion's favour. For the criticism he gets, which is probably, he's unwarranted, really. There's a reason why Corbran is such a massive fan of his. And he was great. But Envia will clearly be the one, if anyone, who starts in midfield for Yukushlu or for Mowat. And when will he be ready to start? Half an hour the other day. So is he in contention for a starting place at Stoke? Maybe. I mean, that'll be a question for Carlos Corbran's press conference later in the week. But from the brief sample size I've seen, he, as you would expect, former French international, long, successful career, top level. He looks like a player without the ball. So I'd be quite intrigued to see him start if that becomes an option. I think if not at Stoke, perhaps because of the relatively quick turnaround of facing Rotherham on the Wednesday, it wouldn't surprise at all, especially given, with respect, limited opposition in Rotherham. Perhaps that is the game he starts, Envia, perhaps, if not in the Potteries on Saturday. So, yeah, I'm looking forward to that. You make a valid point about Yukushlu. Obviously, you reported he was poor down in in London, and he was one of a number of poor players on Monday. And I think it's just not with any particular sort of information on Yakushlu from anywhere, but again, I just wonder with like, there was some suggestion of from reputable sources in Turkey that I saw over the January window of talk and sort of little musing of chat linking in with some top flight Turkish clubs, and I read that it was dismissed by sort of reputable Turkish journals over there. However, with emphasis on Yakushlu will not leave West Bromwich Albion in January. Now, obviously, he's not out of contract and he's still a top player for the club, but will Corbran and Albion want to look at it and think, yeah, is this a midfielder who's maybe towards top end of wage bill, who sometimes struggles to get through games and the physical level? Might Yakushlu look at it and have aspirations in the top flight of his homeland for maybe even his nation before the end of his career? I don't know. Again, this is no definitive thing on Okai's future, but I do just think there's a couple of little things to query there. Not to the same level as maybe a Swift, because Swift's barely been in. Okai's played almost every game. However, I do think there's a couple of little reasons as perhaps why there might be some conversations in the summer. But look, most, if not all, of the Baggies fan base would want Okai Yakushlu to be here next season. I'm sure Carlos Corbran does. However, if the club have to work things out with big earners, and there is interest in some of these players, then I'm sure conversations will be had.
Yeah, I'm sure they will be. Just finally, in terms of individual displays, before we move on to Baggies fans' questions and talking about the next six games, the next huge six final league games of the season, have teams found Mikey Johnston out? He was quiet at Millwall. He was live in the first half, but quiet overall. And he was really quiet yesterday. Has he slipped off the boil a little bit, or have teams found him out a little bit?
Maybe. I've seen a couple of suggestions he's been doubled up on, and I think that's probably a fair assessment. But what I would say is, and I was kind of wary of this when he was scoring worldies every game and whatever it was, 6-7 goals in 9 or something, it was never going to continue. Yeah, it's clearly a purple patch that was not going to end up with 15 goals in 15 games. Obviously, it just wasn't. However, his impact on the game, you're right to question that. I think clubs will always learn through footage and clips and do their homework. And, this is a guy we don't want drifting onto his right, clearly. Still happened a couple of times on Monday, but sort of unable to get that shot away or end product. Obviously, on the end of that rebound, wasn't he, from BTA's chance? And you back him, really. It was close range, but Watford sort of snuffed it out. And I'd still be... I was going to say I'd still be minded to start him at Stoke, but I don't think it would be the biggest surprise or worst idea to have his influence from the bench if you think about Fellows being in from the off and maybe Wallace coming back in. You'd expect Dean Garner to come back in. Johnston can potentially play centrally, Carlos has said, and I'd be interested in seeing that, if that's the case, because I think it just keeps teams guessing, doesn't it? They think that, okay, this is what we do with this winger out on the left flank. Move him inside, pose him a different headache with him. He's classy, his quality is unquestionable. But if teams are going to double up or try and focus on limiting him, then Albion need to take advantage elsewhere, be it move him, take him out, use the space vacated by two markers in the middle or whatever. Use the overlap more. I don't think we saw anything of Townsend the other day, did we? I think he was so quiet. Nothing Dan Alvin's left, really. One to ponder, really, for Corbran with Mikey Johnston. I don't know, the streak was never going to stay as it was. But, just hoping that over the next couple of games, Stoke, Rotherham, and then Sunderland, isn't it? Relatively kind games, let's be honest. Very kind games. That he could just sort of reignite, just get a little spark back going. Because his spark is needed as much as anyone's come, hopefully the playoff campaign.
Yeah, hopefully he can rediscover that after a bit of a quiet weekend. Right, time for a little bit of an advert. Shout out to the Kettle Toaster Man, as always. They are the sponsors of our podcast here at the Expressive Star and the Shropshire Star, your graded product specialist, over on Thorns Road in Briley Hill. And as we were a few weeks ago, we're still talking about these things because they're pretty handy, I tell you. I'm just about to buy a new place and I'm going to be going along to the Kettle Toaster Man to kit out my new gaff with a lot of things. But the other thing's going to be a Daewoo Cyclone Digital One cordless vacuum. £125. Absolute steal. He's got an absolute stack of these products and other products as well. All top brands, all the top brands that you'll always hear of. He's got them down there at his HQ in Briley Hill. But if you want to just go and have a little bit of a browse and a bit of a shop, or from the comfort of your own sofa, the armchair, even you lying in bed at night, you want to pick up a little purchase, head along to the kettleandtoasterman.co.uk. Right, time for some questions from the Albion fans. I think we've got 6 or 7 questions in. I don't have them in front of me a moment ago, but got sidetracked. Let's have a look what we have got. We've got one asking about Coxie's days off, but we'll save that one to later on.
We could just condemn that to the rubbish bin if you like.
Well, we'll see how we are for time. See how we are for time. John Mason has asked, sorry, but are we a better team with Jed in? He gives us non-stop running, which Swift does not. Coxie, discuss.
I think so. Now I know Jed Wallace struggled down at Millwall, didn't he, on Friday? I think not for the first time against Millwall. I don't know if there's anything in that, you know, his former club and all of that sort of the occasion and stuff. I don't know. I mean, again, I'd like to see Wallace have a bit of a prolonged run in his position out wide. Now, if he's not performing as he didn't in Millwall, then you know, he'll come off. And I think on Monday, Corbyn shows he's, you know, there's no problem in leaving out the captain for a game. So, but I think, you know, Wallace's energy, you know, it's almost used at times a bit as a stick to beat him with, really, in terms of, oh, you know, he's not offering much with the ball, all he does is run without it. But yeah, there's a place for that, you know. The pressure players put, you know, opposition defenses under, force errors, all that kind of thing. And look, Jed Wallace can still cross a ball better than many in the Championship. So I'd always rather see him in, but I've got no problem if he's been off the boil for a game or two to bring him out of the side. Shouldn't play. Yeah, you know, and he would never expect that, and Ali Corbran would never do it. You know, shouldn't just play because he's a captain or a leader or a high experienced player or anything like that. I think it's a different conversation now to before Christmas in terms of, and I'm talking about probably, you know, post Phillips injury, other players out, Swift injured. There were very few options really, and it's a different world now, isn't it? With Fellows having emerged, with obviously Johnson, as I mentioned. Phillips back now, as we know, and Dean Garner and everyone available, really. It's a different conversation. So, yeah, Wallace will know as well as anyone, by no means guaranteed a place, but how the doubleheaders sort of paved out, and with Stoke away coming up on Saturday, would I want Wallace starting out in one of the wide positions? Yeah, to be honest, yes. With Thomas Asante in the box for him. And dare we say Josh Madger, Johnny? Dare we say the lesser spotted Josh Madger, who could well be on the bench on Saturday. We don't sort of know that for definite yet. We'll get an update later in the week, but I think that's the loosely penciled in plan. So more options really. I think Wallace's impact should have overlooked. That's my opinion.
Yeah. Right, thanks for your question, John. Next one, going into the playoffs, do we see our current form as a negative because we're starting games poorly and going behind, or a positive because we're showing a never-so-die attitude and getting back into games? Well, I don't think you can really argue with the form. I think it's one defeat in 12. But I get what you're saying. What do you think, Oxy?
I think you can read it either way. There's a little bit of is your glass half full or half empty here, isn't there, I think. Performance levels over these two have been below par by and large, and obviously won't be good enough for joining the playoffs. So that's clear. But it's a little bit cliched, isn't it? But we are at the running stage where I think performance level, by and large, goes out the window to a point. Look, it's clearly about results. Yeah, if we talk having this conversation in October, November, where you're looking to see how your season's going to go, where the performance levels are going to take you, yeah, it's a different conversation. But yeah, you know, back then, clean sheets, I mean, from memory, were sort of 10 a penny, weren't they? And Albion's rear guard was not letting anything in. And it was the bedrock to many wins. I think they have to rediscover that. I do. And I think, look, performance, they can't just stumble over the line in these final six games, I would say. I know we're going to get into our predictions in a second, aren't we, Johnny? They can't just stumble over these games with, you know, hardly any wins and a few defeats. And no one will want that, because you sort of, yes, you still get over the line just about, but you lose momentum. And then, you know, can you raise performance levels back up? So all of this chat about sort of getting the 75 points wrapped up as soon as possible, yeah, great. And then rotating and coming off the gas, well, great. But what if you know, sort of turn in non-performances, you know, Leicester, Sheff Wednesday, Preston, and then a kind of nowhere momentum-wise for the playoffs? I think Albion need to find a way of switching up performances and turning it on in at least a few of these games before the end of the season. If not for the points, then just for the level they're playing at going into it. However, until they're mathematically over that dotted line, which they still have to do, you know, we must add, it is about just chalking up these results, isn't it? It is. And it could have been quite easily no points at all taken from Friday and Monday. Instead, it was two. I'd have wanted at least four personally. So it's, yeah, it's a bit, it's under. I mean, even three would have been a little underwhelming, I'd suggest. But in the context of Monday and all of those rivals losing, which was quite surreal, wasn't it? Yeah, Norwich, Coventry, Preston even, and Hull on the evening, all lost, you know, and so almost did Albion, which would have been a real missed opportunity. Instead, you know, the manner of the late points takes the gap from 7 to 8. There are all these little, you know, caveats, aren't there? I think Coventry's game in hand is not till end of April, isn't it? And I think it's against Hull. Yeah. So, yeah, rivals playing each other. And at that point, it extends the gap. That's the bottom line of it. Yes, the gap could have been extended to 10. Would it have been 10? Yeah, 10. But, you know, a point's better than nothing, isn't it? I think there is a perhaps something in slow starts. I think that's existed for a little while now, hasn't it? And Carlos Corberan, the last pre-match press conference I did with him before Millwall, one of the big things he said about how he wants to see improvement in his squad, in his side, is the management of games in certain periods. And I think, yeah, a portion of that, I think, will be from 10, 15, 20 minutes in to kind of half time. They seem to kind of at times start well briefly, but then tail off. And that'll be something I think the head coach will have his eye on.
Nate Folgers has asked, when is Coxie booking his annual leave for next season? What Premier League away days is he avoiding? Newcastle, Bournemouth, any more?
I think he got it in one there. In all seriousness, neither of the above, because they're both new grounds. So don't worry, I'll be finding myself.
Oh,
there,
yeah,
to
you're
check
a stickler.
Check off the 92. Yeah, yeah. I still have, I'm excited actually to go to Leicester because I've never been. So that's a new one for me, the first one for a while. But there's a good few in the Premier League I haven't done. So as long as I get say, over the other half at home, then I won't be missing any new away ground in the Premier League. However, yeah, life doesn't always work like that, does it, Johnny? But as long as we are talking about Premier League fixtures next year, Johnny, I'll take as many days off as you want me to.
He's also put, can you tell, have a word with Mr. Patel to avoid the playoff final, please, because we can never win the exact games. Yeah,
what is he? None for four now, Sean.
None for four now, yeah. He's like I was when I first started. I couldn't buy a win. But TJ Smithy, our quizmaster, has asked, does this show the difference in the backbone of West Brom from last season, even earlier on in this season? to get themselves back into games? Or is it the added quality coming off the bench that is making the difference, or possibly both? That's, yeah, interesting. For me, it's the determination, the steely determination, rather than the quality on the bench. But it's a determination that was devoid under Val. It was devoid under Bruce, and at the start under Carlos. Even though Carlos had turned it around a little bit, there were still times where Albion would limp to defeats. For example, at Hull away, I think they were dreadful last season. Whereas now, they can be dreadful and still get a point.
Yeah, it's a good question, isn't it? I think I would have to say I think there's an argument to say there's both in there. I wrote the debrief not long before we recorded here, and one of my points was, a sort of newish found true grit in Albion, and a mentality forged by the head coach and his staff. I think an underrated quality of Carlos and trait is his sort of elite mindset and mentality, and the way his brain works in terms of motivating his players. Not quite seen anything like it personally. So I think that's how players in the building remain so grounded. And I think we haven't had to see so often, have we, Albion? Albion mount such a sort of comeback from behind under Cole Brennan. I suppose it's mostly because they rarely concede too many too often against him. But they needed it on Monday, and they showed it. And they showed it on Friday in terms of coming from behind for an important point. I think, I wrote this morning, Johnny, there's a soft underbelly at the club, wasn't there, that had gone back a little while before he came in. And now it's a rock solid mindset, really. And that's for most, if not all, the players in the building. I think it'll serve Albion well once the playoff semi-final start, be it Southampton, be it Ipswich. I mean, it doesn't look like being Ipswich at the minute, does it, after what they did last night? Whether it's more likely to be Southampton at the minute, it looks that way, doesn't it? But yeah, I think I was going to slightly veer off with this question, Johnny, just for a quick point I'd like to make. I think the quirkiness of being fifth for as long as they have, unbroken for five, getting on for 6 months, is, to me, it's just amazing. In terms of just strange and a hell of an achievement, because can you imagine the frustration of, I mean, yes, I know the gap to fourth was massive and you can almost sort of assume they're not going to be caught, and they haven't been caught, the top four, but I haven't lost too often this season, have they? Yes, away from home, perhaps. But the frustration at not being able to claw anyone back in must hit everyone. But everything below Albion has been so inconsistent. The only consistent thing about the teams below Albion is their inconsistency. And runners and riders in the top six, their form's come and gone, hasn't it? Look at Hull's embarrassment of riches. Look at all the players they've been able to bring in. Everyone looks at their squad and look at their form. They're nowhere, aren't they? Yes, Norwich have done a good job of late, but where were they before that? I suppose Cov before that as well. Preston are the ones who've remained fairly consistent, and they're outsiders, really, aren't they? I think Albion's mentality to kind of zone in on being in this no man's land of like all the movement below them and the carnage above them in that crazy auto race is to be credited, because they haven't, despite not moving, they haven't stayed focused, they haven't been distracted by anything. Might have got complacent. Been fifth for ages, nothing's going to get us here, foot off the gas, and then you're in trouble. I haven't done that either. So I really think it's worthy of credit. I said it on the post-match video on Monday. You only see a team stay in the same position for that long, really, when they're first. Or perhaps in Rotherham's case, when they're bottom or, cut adrift. It's just quite odd. And I can't remember seeing it with a side, especially. Maybe you get it with second place sides you're chasing down. But, odd. And, I think we've all just assumed Albion will finish fifth for months now, haven't we? And it'd be interesting to see how that dynamic works for the playoffs. And one final thing on that. I don't think you were in the lounge in the media suite, Johnny, just before the game. But Sky Sports, our press colleague Joe Chapman tweeted a picture of it. Sky Sports put up a graphic before the game, you know, promotion debate, and it had picture of the top four and the league table and their fixtures, you know, race for automatics, all of that. Discuss that, went on to the next slide, and it's like sixth down to ninth, and that league table and those fixtures, just like no reference or mention of Albion, kind of in between in this no man's land where, you know, Sky are clearly just assuming the Baggies are home and hosed, which I think, you know, deep down, you know, most of us are confident in that, but yeah, Carlos Corberan wouldn't be best pleased with that, would he, to find his side kind of trapped in between and, you know, no discussion, just assume that they're, you know, they're there. Strange, really. Strange middle ground they've found themselves in, but it's to their absolute credit, in my opinion, that they've shown the sort of mental resilience and consistency to keep it going.
Yeah, no, it's a really good point. Good question as well. Final one, Lee Saithel. Realistically, three more wins would see us safe in the playoffs. Do you think we should be, we had this question last week, really. Do you think we should be rotating players as the four rested? It didn't start, looked good.
Kind of answered it just, didn't we,
yeah,
really?
Do you think if he gets a chance at Stoke? Yeah. For me, it's like, it's not an idea. It's not a rule that you put in or anything, but I think in them games, if they are home and hosed, you're probably looking at maybe changing a couple to three players every game. You don't want to be taking, you don't want to be massively tweaking it, to be honest. You know, there's positions where you don't really rotate players. Albin's back four won't be rotated, I doubt.
Corbran will take it as the physical levels are for each game. He will. Now, I'll take the point that, you know, might win the next three, and then, you know, how do you use your squad? And I think it'll be more the in-game rotation. I do. I think you still want to get 55, 60 minutes in legs and then half an hour in other legs, you know, so everyone's at optimum levels.
Yeah, I think that will be the case. Lee, thank you very much for your question. And Albion fans, thank you for your questions. Just finally, we've got about 5 or so minutes before we wrap up here. We're going to look at the final six games. We've got Stoke, Rotherham, Sunderland, Leicester, Sheffield Wednesday, Preston in the last six games of the season. And Coxie informed me before this podcast that he's been doing a deep dive, researching stats, getting his head into books, you know, doing a real investigation for these last six games. So we're going to go through the games and I'm going to get him to make predictions. I'm not going to make predictions now because I know Coxie's done so much homework ahead of this question.
You've gone in strong there, Johnny.
Yeah, starting with Stoke, really. Let's go through the games first and see what you think is going to happen in terms of wins, you know, draws, defeats. Stoke, Saturday. A bit of an upturn, Stoke. Beat Hull on Friday. Not turned it round, so to speak, but they're looking all right at the moment, so it's, you know,
yeah,
it's not going to be easy.
It's not easy, no. I just, in summary, obviously six games, 18 points up for grabs. My sort of predictions has yielded nine points of those possible 18, which takes Albion to 78, so obviously over the line. Stoke, I've down as a draw. I think it's a tough game. We're a bit in a bit of a draw series at the minute, aren't we? Bit of a streak. Away form, improved no end and found a way not to lose games. And I think just the increase of options will help Albion claim a point up there at the Bet365. But Stoke have got a hell of a lot on the line, haven't they, as we know, and as you say, have upturned. So, yeah, I'm taking a point from Saturday.
Point from Saturday. Rotherham, 3, nailed on.
Win, yeah, that's a win. One of two wins I've predicted.
That's just two wins. Sunderland. Mm. Sunderland, that's a home game, Sunderland. A couple of weeks on Saturday.
I've got that down as a draw as well. Don't know why.
Is this pessimistic, Coxie?
Yeah, but 9 points is enough, isn't it? And I think it is enough. And I'm kind of predicting a bit of what I sort of said I would fear 10 or 15 minutes ago in terms of not limping over the line, but just not the amount of wins maybe you'd want. Just ask it, Johnny. Don't come for me.
I've just totted up mine now just to see how they rank. So we'll go.
I've said 9. How many points do you think?
9. I'll say mine at the end. We'll go through these games, okay. See how you're racking up. So Sunderland,
Sunderland, I've gone draw. Yeah.
Leicester.
Leicester away of the six games is the only one I've got as a defeat.
Yeah, that's to be understandable. Obviously, their form has fallen off a cliff. They did win Monday. Sheffield Wednesday away.
Albion could go and get points just some of there, couldn't they? But Leicester are going for a lot, aren't they? Let's be honest. Sheffield Wednesday, I've said a point on the road.
Preston.
Tough. And Preston's my second win on the final day.
Second win. Right, so you've got 9. I've got 12.
Okay.
12 points. Draw at Stoke, beat Rotherham, beat Leicester. Beat Sunderland. Draw with Leicester. I think it's a type of game that suits Albion, where they can just soak up the pressure.
Yeah,
the break.
I see that. Yeah,
They'll win at Chef Wednesday. Chef Wednesday are dreadful.
Well, I think that Hillsborough pitch could be a leveler, though.
Chef Wednesday are dreadful, mate. They're gone. Well, they're not gone, but yeah, they're not great. Yeah. Albion should be winning there. And Preston, point on our final day of the season. Take that.
Okay. Yeah, I mean, Sunderland maybe is one that everyone will look at as a win. I mean, look what happened at Sunderland the other day. But that's the sort of maybe surprising one I've gone for. I think one defeat in there is probably likely and most likely at Leicester, yeah. I get. And I think the occasion on the final day, everything will be wrapped up by then, you know, we almost certainly. But I think Preston, Preston will highly likely be out of the race, won't they, for top six by then. Let's be honest. I think Albion will just sort of sign off in style and want a sign off for the playoffs with a win. Chef Wednesday should be a win. You're right. But I just think if they're still scrapping, I mean, I don't know what their position looks like at the moment. Hold on. They are second bottom, but they're still right there. So it depends maybe how whether they've still got something to fight for, I guess. Obviously, different conversation if their relegation has been confirmed. But I do think it could be a little bit of a surprise and struggle. But yeah, I mean, 9 is enough. 78 points in my turn. Albion would want far more than 2 wins from these remaining 6 games. Been a few draws this season out there. And that's how I see it. So we'll see. We'll write this down, Johnny. And the loser has to get the drinks in.
So the loser gets the beers at the end of the season. Coxie, as always. Big pleasure, mate. Great to talk to you. Baggies fans, not long now. That mission complete sign is coming into distance a little bit, isn't it? But there is work to be done. Hopefully, it won't take too long to seal it all. Thank you very much for listening. Till next time, for me and Coxie. As always, boing, boing.
Boing, boing.